Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, J.D. Blake and Ailish. I'm J.D. Bunkus. I'm stoked to have our next guest because he's a great storyteller. I don't think we've actually had him on the show. I think that he's definitely been on the station, but I can't remember actually ever having a chance to have talked with him. But right now he's working for our sister station, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. He's always in one. It's former NHL defenseman, Stanley Cup champion, Mike Commodore. Hey, man, what's going on?
I wasn't in one last night, just for the record. I got some sleep. You got to take advantage of nights off around here during the Battle of Alberta. When there's no games, you get sleep.
Yeah, that's just it. It's like you got to do it. Listen, our producer told us that when he booked you for this time slot, I went, are you serious? Like, this is, I'm very impressed. So I had to know that you weren't. Because if you were in one, that it was going to be just an all-night situation, and I was going to be like, good morning, and you're like, yeah, it's still night for me. I'm going to sleep after this. That's what's going on.
Yeah. If this would have been post-game night, that's I'm either still up or my phone would still be ringing. You guys wouldn't be getting a hold of me, one of the two.
Okay, so we're back tonight, right? And that was, let's put it this way, that first game was interesting. It was compelling. It was must watch. It was a lot of different things. I don't know if it was good hockey. Here was my take, and I'm kind of curious to hear what you have to say about it. Do you think there was too much emotion in that first game? Like, not from an aesthetic standpoint, not from a fan standpoint, but from, like, those players? Because I'm having a tough time understanding how one of the best defensive teams in hockey, in the Calgary Flames, completely went into the tank in that game where you went, oh my God, like, they're actually going to blow this massive lead.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I was sitting here. I didn't go to the game for game one. I'm going tonight, but I didn't go on game one. I'm sitting here watching it, and I agree. It was interesting, to put it one way. I mean, as far as, I'll answer the question for you. Hockey-wise, that game was straight-up trash for both teams. Yes, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers were
–
I mean, it was. It was like, is this a charity event to the Beer League game right now? 9-6? Giving up 4-goal leads. But I will say, I do think as far as the emotion part of it, like, I'll give them a pass. Like, there was a lot. It was just a couple of days, but, I mean, it's the Battle of Alberta. There was a ton of talk about it around here. That's all anybody wanted. That's all everybody's talked about. Hasn't happened in 31 years. Everybody's fired up. And so I would say, a lot of that, like, there were a lot of the guys I don't think knew what to expect. A lot of us didn't know what to expect either. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that game was trash. I will say, I mean, the Oilers, if I'm the Flames, it's like, hey, we got a W. Let's play better next game. A win's a win, but we know we need to play better. If I'm the Oilers, that game goes in the trash too. And everybody in that locker room, I mean, aside from maybe McDavid, and needs to know they need to play way, way better. The Flames, at least, when the puck dropped for the first period, they dominated and got off to a big lead. Now, then they totally messed it up. The goaltending was trash. All three goaltenders were awful. And then the Oilers came back. So the Flames were terrible then, obviously. But once it was 6-6, which is, I can't believe I'm saying that. Once it was 6-6, then the Flames took over again and dominated the rest of the game. So, I mean, I'll tell you what, if the Oilers don't play significantly, significantly, significantly better, they can start booking tee times for next Wednesday right now, because it'll be done in four.
Yeah, certainly felt that way.
It was that bad.
It was that bad. And the hype on the panel with the cowboy hats, it was awesome. But, you know, there was so much energy in that arena that I'm sure the players felt it. So you're in that locker room. You're heading into, you know, tonight's game on either side. Like, what's a tangible thing you can actually pull from that game that can be something that, hey, let's build on this specific thing that we did well? Or let's shift this mentality into tonight's game and what to expect. Are we expecting a 9-6 game tonight? Is it going to be much tighter matched, or is it just kind of a coin toss at this point?
I mean, that's a good question. If I'm the Flames, I guess I would just focus on, hey, look, like, I think the biggest mismatch in the series for me is the Flames forwards. The biggest advantage, call it, for the Flames, is the Flames forwards. If they get on the forecheck, I think the Edmonton Oilers defense is in trouble. So I guess I would, if I was the Flames, I would kind of focus on, because at times they were all over them. I guess I would kind of focus on that.
Yeah.
If I'm the Oilers, I mean, now we're really searching here. But, I mean, they did show some grit, you know, hanging in there and coming back. So if you're looking for something positive, I guess I would maybe focus on that. But, like, on both sides, they got to know. I mean, going into this game, I mean, there has to be a huge emphasis on we need to play a little defense here. Like, there were so many turnovers in that game. I was sitting there watching it. I'm like, oh, my God, is this, like, a preseason game? Yeah. Like, and just turnovers, flipping it around at the blue lines. And then, like, you know, an Oilers guy would have, you know, get the puck on a turnover in the neutral zone and then skate it right into one of his buddy's feet and turn it over, and it's going back the other way. So I'm expecting – I mean, I'm either expecting, a low-scoring game with some tight defense, or, I mean, if the Oilers need to play way better. So if the Oilers don't play way better, I mean, I hate to say this because I'd like to see a good series. I could see the Flames steamrolling them.
Dude, this
now,
is
now I'm not talking to the tune of 9-1, but no. Like 4-5-1 or something like that.
Yeah, this is why I asked you about the emotion, though, and how you kind of settle that down a little bit. Because if I'm Calgary, it kind of feels like if they lose this series, it's a bit of a choke job. Because when I'm looking at these two teams, I'm like, okay, where is Edmonton better? Well, it's not net, even though Markstrom was brutal in that first game. Like, he let in some goals where I went, you got to pull him, even though I don't know who the backup is. Like, I went, doesn't matter. Get the E-bug in here. He's going to be better than Markstrom. He's having a meltdown. Right. They're better on the blue line. Their blue line's deeper. They're built better for a playoff run. Their forward group is deeper. Like, yeah, okay, they don't have McDavid. Nobody does. The Oilers have McDavid. They have the best player in the series. Awesome. Outside of that, I don't know. Draisaitl doesn't even look fully healthy, so that doesn't feel like an advantage for Edmonton. It's just like, don't choke. Don't get into the run-and-gun game that Edmonton wants to play. Don't get it into a weird one like that, and you should be fine. You should wrap this up quickly, and that gets back to, like, the emotion of this thing, right, is... Dude, it feels so big there, right? Like, the stakes of this. And that's where I get into the weird stuff. Like, you know, you're doing your cup run with Calgary. It was massive, right? Like, it took over all of Canada. It was this massive, massive, massive story. And it was like the sea of red. And people were losing their minds and going nuts. And I don't know what it kind of looks like post-pandemic and what we're kind of doing now as fans or how big it is in the city. But I would just imagine that it's impossible to escape for these guys the magnitude and the pressure of this series, that this is, like, going to be defining for the region for, like, the rest of everybody's lives there. Like, and I don't know how you kind of balance that as a player when you're in that, or ignore that when you're in an arena that has that much juice.
Yeah, no, those are all good points, and I agree with all of them. But, like, the Flames should beat this Oilers team. Yes, they have Connor McDavid, the best player in the world, arguably, if you want to put it that way, whatever. But this is a team sport. This isn't, and this isn't NBA basketball. I mean, you need more than one superstar to win games. It's a team effort. Draisaitl is definitely hurt, which is too bad because the Oilers, to even have a chance, I think really, really need him. And it looks like he's out there on one leg. I mean, if he can handle the puck and everything, but he can't skate it. And so, which is too bad. But no, you're right. It is emotional around here. People are fired up. It is hard to get away from. But I think as a player, and I think this is going to be a big part of the series for both teams, is that, you know, once you maybe get off the social media a little bit and maybe stick around home a little bit during the series and maybe focus a little bit on yourself and your family or whatever and try and get away from it a little bit, obviously be excited. You get into the rink. But, you know, before you go out there for the game, I mean, you also need to realize, and we're still just playing a hockey game here. I mean, it's not like we're doing anything different. It's just everybody in the province especially is very, very excited. But if you're going to play your best, I think, and if you're going to play properly, you need to kind of tone the emotions down, try and keep it together. I mean, if you want to get fired up, if the game's out of hand, by all means, go right ahead. But I think it's good to kind of try and stay as calm as possible. You're not doing anything different. Just keep doing what you've been doing.
Yeah, that's... And I guess that's sort of the question, right, is how much is that emotion, how much is that energy an equalizing force? Like, how much harder is it to win when you're in a place like that? Because, like, you, like I said, you went on that cup run with Calgary, and then the following year, like, post-lockout, you win in Carolina. And I wonder how much, I don't know, is it easier? Like, when you're playing for Carolina, where, I don't know, did you guys sell out every one of those games? I don't know. Our buddy Anthony Stewart's always talking about how great Carolina fans are. I'm like, I don't know. It feels like you got to roll a pig out to the hockey games, becomes a bigger celebrity. You got to do the swim search thing. Like, I don't know. I'm not really buying it. I don't really know. Come on, Carolina. I'm just saying, do you think it's easier to win in those markets when you get into these, like, pressure-packed moments where you know, like, man, if you're Matthew Tkachuk, everybody in Calgary knows who you are. Like, there's nowhere you could go where people don't know who you are. You know, it's just, it's different.
Yeah. No, playing in Canada, playing in, like, the U.S. or most U.S. teams, well, all U.S. teams, is definitely different. First off, for Carolina, it was, Anthony Stewart is correct. And I had my doubts, too, when I went down there. And during the regular season, yeah, they don't feel it every night or whatever, unless the team is really good. But once, after football's done, after college football and college basketball is done, they are all in. And for that playoff run, I'll tell you what, Edmonton was loud in the finals, but there was no building louder than Carolina. I mean, they started
you know
drinking
why,
at like 11 o'clock in the morning.
I was just going to say, this is a booze situation where in Canada, alcohol in arenas is so prohibitive and we don't have tailgates. This isn't like a they're good hockey fans. This is they're just better at partying. Like, that's what they know what
they
to
are
do better.
At party. Like, yes. Yeah. And you're totally right. When you're down south, hey, the simple fact of the matter is, it's not freezing cold out, and there's other things to do. You got to work hard to get people to want to go to an arena. Yeah. That's just how it is. Yeah. But I think when it comes down to, like, you know, talk about the Tkachuk thing and playing in Canada, I really think it can be harder. And I think it comes down to an individual, like to the individual. I mean, some guys can handle it. Like, it's not a real big deal. Like, hey, there's a lot of pressure on me, but whatever, I can handle this. Let's just do what I do. And then there are individuals that you'll see guys come up here, try and play in Canada, and they fold. Where it's just they can't, oh, my God, I can't get away from it. Everybody knows who I am. This is a lot of pressure, and it's just not for them. So I think with what you're talking about, a lot of it comes down to the individual. Maybe not so much the team thing, but, like, to the individual. You have to figure out a way to handle it. And I don't know. I think it's going to be a significantly – I mean, fingers crossed, it better be. If I'm in the arena and watch another 9-6 trash game again, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to end up drinking more, but I'm hoping for a totally different – hoping for a good hockey game today.
Yeah, if you're at the arena, though, it's like you're going to have to dig into the pension because it's just so expensive. That's the thing. Is you just get ready. I don't know if there's like an alumni booth. If you got like, I guess people would probably pay for some of your drinks, but you must feel a little guilty as a millionaire when somebody buys you a beer and you go, wow, like now your kid can't go to college because you bought me a couple of beers at a hockey game. Okay,
you know what?
Yeah,
I pay for my fair share of beer. So somebody offers me one, I take it.
100%. This is a what goes around comes around situation, right? Like you give what you give what you take. You put out good beer, giving energy into the world, and you get it back. Okay, so this is my last kind of energy question or like market pressure question, because here in Toronto they lost again. I don't know if you heard. There's a lot of excuses why they lost. We lost better this time, so it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Nobody's fired, nobody's going anywhere because we lost better, so it's pretty sweet. We won the hypothetical cup, which is if the Leafs would have gone past this round, boy would they have done some damage, buddy. Like, you should hear all the hypothetical takes that are flying around here right now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
We're sick. We're so sick at hypothetical winning. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe it.
Yep.
But you actually have to believe it because it's the only way to do it. But either way. So it's got me thinking, though, watching this Calgary series, right, where I'm seeing Edmonton and, like, the arena's just that way and the fans are interacting that way. And you can just feel that tension. And the whole notion of being in a city like that where, again, you're the number one celebrity in town when you're on the hockey team. Like, again, you know this because you're going to that game tonight. You're going to get recognized the entire time. And everybody from Calgary still remembers who you are from that run. Whereas, what is it versus like a market like Toronto where there's way more media eyeballs, there's way more fans, like there's just more Twitter eyeballs? What do you think is like the harder one to play in? The city where everybody knows you everywhere you go and like might actually come up to you, or the city where you get to have anonymity in Toronto, right? Like nobody's really, I don't think, going to bother too many guys now, but that extra media pressure exists, that extra like fan Twitter social media pressure exists.
God, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, I never played in Toronto. I heard nothing but good things. I heard if you're playing in Toronto, like it's from an organization standpoint, I heard it's an excellent place to play. You get treated very well. But I don't know. Like my first thought that came to mind, I think it would be easier to play out here than in Toronto. But then also on the other side of it, it's like, well, if you're playing for the Edmonton Oilers, let's say after a game like last night or whatever, let's not use that. If you're playing for the Edmonton Oilers, let's say, and the season isn't going well, you know, if that's in Toronto, you could probably go to a grocery store and everybody in there isn't going to know who you are, right? Whereas if you're in Edmonton and you go down to the Safeway to get a steak, I mean, you might have Johnny, the oil rigger, coming up to you and telling you you're trash as you're trying to get some food for dinner. I don't know.
Just trying to get some of those good Safeway cookies, and Johnny's getting in the way.
I'm just trying to get something to eat here, Johnny. Would you stop calling me trash? I'm trying here. But the media pressure in Toronto would be significant, you know, when things aren't going well. Or, you know, after they lost Game 7, you know, dealing with the media – and they're pointed questions, and they know what to ask. And, I don't know. I'm going to go with equal. I wish I would have got to play in Toronto so I'd have a better background on it, but I'll go with equal. I think they can be equally tough.
Okay, so last one from me. This is the big one for you. So the Leafs have started slow. The Leafs started slow again. They were behind in four straight playoff games. Right? Four straight games. They haven't been able to close the deal. There was a guy here that you weren't the biggest fan of and like kind of got run out of town, and you seem to be right on for a lot of, like, you seem to be correct.
Thank you.
You might have had the pulse on that guy before some other people did.
Thank you.
But was he right? Like, he's always preached they start slow, and he was trying to get them to be like a little harder. When it came to those moments, was he kind of validated in this with all these like Game 7 losses and these inability to close games where they keep falling behind?
I mean, look, just to set the record straight with my friends out in Toronto, since the Leafs have fired, I've never had anything against the Toronto Maple Leafs,
but I
do hate Mike Babcock. Since Babs got canned, I am your guys' top fan in Western Canada.
Of course. If they win after he leaves, that's the most truth I've ever heard from anybody. You're desperate for them to win. 100%.
I am desperate for them to win. I was sitting there watching that Game 7 at the casino. I had an event. I'm like, would you guys please win this game? Win this game, goddamn. I'm not going to sit there and say he's right. I think I know everybody out there, I'm sure, is sick and tired of hearing it, but I think the Leafs are very, very close. I think they played well enough to win. I think they had some bad luck. I mean, I would have rather had them, if I'm out there in Toronto, I would have rather had the Leafs, and this is, I would have said this before the first two games in this Tampa Florida series, I much rather would have seen.
Oh, we lost Mike. Hey, that's okay. I think what he was going to say is we don't need to call him back, Josh, because we'll let him run. And just like Daniele, obviously, text him, thank you for his time. But I think what he was going to say is he would have rather that they just got blown out and smoked, right? Because we're all feeling that to a degree. Because this is more complicated, right? This is the worst. Okay, you know what this is setting up for? This next Leaf season is setting up for an all-time, maybe the number one, I told you so season of all time, because people are going to faction off into either they need to run this thing back, and if they get to the first round, which they probably will no matter what, like they have to get to the first round. It's so unlikely that you
no
keep
matter what.
I'm just I know it sounds like that sounds stupid, but they eventually have to get to the first round. And
what
so,
are you going to do? Stab me?
Yeah. So this is setting up.
That is your favorite thing to say on the show, Blake. You must say that twice, three times a week.
It's the number one Leaf fan thing of like, how could it get worse? It can't possibly get worse.
But that's it. If the Leafs don't win, people are going to have the ultimate. It's going to be insufferable. There's going to be people who go, I told you so. I told you they were flawed. I told you they were losers. Yep. I told you they couldn't do it. And everyone's going to have to eat it who slightly believed in this team. It's going to be horrific for anybody that believed that they could do it. Other than the faction of people who are just like, you know, sycophants for some of this, where they just, you know, they're diehard for one way or the other. Or you're going to get the other side where it's like, I knew they were close. I knew that Tampa Bay went on and beat Florida.
Toronto, you guys just overreacted.
Yep, everybody overreacted, but they stuck with the plan.
The media sucks, all you guys.
But I will say this. The I told you so, it's incredible because it's going to be purely first-round dependent. It's not like, yeah, the Leafs could win the Cup, and then it's an added layer of validation if they do deep. But all it will be is next season's first round will be, in a weird way, there will be two rivalries. One will be the two teams that play each other in that hockey game and the two fan bases that, and then Leafs fans versus Leafs fans will be the undercard of the I told you so bowl of who gets to be right about whether the group was flawed or whether the group was right there and got bad bounces. I think the truth lies in the middle, as it does with most things. I really do believe that there is a little that, when I played that Bruce Cassidy clip earlier, right, and he goes, I didn't think we played our best game in Game 7. That's how I feel about the Leafs, too, is that they played really good. They showed a lot of good things in that series against Tampa, but I didn't think they played their best game in Game 7. And I still believe that their best game involves their power play scoring, which it didn't do down the stretch. There are some things that feel a little snake-bitey, you know, with these guys. And I think that you make your own luck in this world. And so given those opportunities, which were three in my mind, one was to go up 3-1, you blew it. One was to close out in Game 6, you blew it. One was to close out in Game 7, you blew it. That I'm not throwing that out entirely. But it's impossible to also ignore that they did look better, that the Stars showed up and dominated for stretches of that series, and that you start that series over again, you just hit the reset button and you play it out 10 times. The Leafs probably win 5, Tampa wins 5, and then beyond that, Toronto's one of the better teams. Like, those things are impossible to ignore. So I would just say in the I told you so bowl, do what I'm doing right now, and that's hedge your bets. Hedge your bets. You know, hedge your bets, everybody. Because
you say
you don't
a little
wanna
bit of both.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you clip that part and you say, bingo. Well, remember on May 20th, I said I should run it back. And
but it's the
don't
truth.
Remember what I said May 19th.
It's the truth. And that's the reality of this thing, is that every time that you look at a situation like this, it's never so it's never so easy to figure out that it's one quick solution. Because if it was, then no offense to any of us, but neither of us would be any of us would be smarter than Kyle Dubas at figuring it out. Like, he would be better at it than all of us, even though we all think, or some of us think, that, you know, he sucks or he should be fired, whatever. But it's the facts. If it was one thing, if it was one quick fix, Dubas would figure out what that one thing was. Everybody would know what it was. It's complicated. It's layered and it's difficult, and makes it a fun sports conversation when we can have fun with it and we're not just screaming at each other online and freaking out like lunatics. But either way, hedge your bets for the I told you so bowl next year, coming to a city near you, Toronto 2023, the I told you so bowl, brought to you by the Fan Morning Show with JD Blake and Ailish. Who will
That's a great promo.
Thank you.
Good voice for that.
Next year. Let's take a break. Great stuff with Mike Commodore today. Really fun guy. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely have
just
him
sucks
on
that Babcock still has the power in this city to cut his mic off when, when he said
He definitely did.
Hate Mike Babcock.
It worked out. So yeah, good job by our producer Daniele for grabbing him. Bad job by the phone companies silencing the Babcock hater still to this day. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's give some best bets. Let's take a look around the world of sports. Let's see where we're placing our money tonight on the Wake and Rake. It's JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be right back.
It is the Wake and Rake on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish. I like sometimes waiting for the radio edit to do the, like the little DJ thing, like the little flip. Tough day for Wake and Rake yesterday. Tough day all around. Awful. We're moving forward. It's on to the weekend. It's on to the weekend, okay? Like plenty of gambling all throughout the weekend. Plenty of picks coming up.
Time to get it back.
I will say that there's a few numbers, gambling numbers to go over here quickly. One is I am shocked. I would have set the odds at Ailish actually talking about why Keith Tkachuk didn't throw his hat at minus, I don't know, 20,000. Didn't get there. Never got a reference.
Oh, it hasn't come up.
He said it's just his favorite hat and that it's lucky because they've won some games where he's worn the hat. I'm like, okay, you won there. I was a little dubious of the record in which he's worn the hat. Like,
he also said that there was the net in the way and he wasn't going to make it on the ice anyway and that somebody would end up with his hat. It's your favorite hat. Respect to that.
No, respect to that. No, I think that if you're at a hockey game and you see a hat trick and you don't throw your hat, moon jail. Like, you got to throw your hat. And even if it doesn't make it down to the ice, who cares? Throw the hat. You got to live a little, right? It's
What do they do with the hats that land on the ice is my question. Like,
they get them all together. Hats. Yeah, they get them all together. I'm pretty sure that they used to do it where if you really wanted to, you could kind of go down, and if you gave the description of the hat, that you could actually get it back.
Mine was a Calgary Flames red hat.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like, I think that they don't do that anymore. But also that I'm sure they just donate them, that they give them to people or they give them to organizations. Like, I don't know. They don't just throw them in a fire. Like, they don't just be like,
no, they clean them and resell them. Classic.
Yeah, make some more money. They put them back in the gift shop.
A little yard sale. So,
like, ooh, there's lots of hair stuck in this one. This one's got sweat stains. They're like, yeah, just buy it. It's in a bin. Actually, that would be great. It's hat trick hats. You pay for them. You go. They're like
$1. That's actually really smart. Like, discount
hats.
Yeah, all
the money goes to charity. I don't know. I think you can get
free
the hat
idea.
Back. Yeah, free idea. All of our ideas are free. That's the point of the show. There's no charge for any of the ideas.
They have to like, subscribe, and give 5 stars and download.
And
that's
honestly,
the fee.
I think I should just put my Venmo in my Twitter bio and just. Be
you
like,
know, the Sims would be Venmoing me a lot. I should
I know
do that.
They would. Yeah, you would. Yeah, you're right. You know what, Sims? Just send Ailish money. Just do it. Just see what we can get today. Let's just see what Ailish can get. And we'll put it all on the parlay, whatever she gets, and that's it. That's what we'll do. We won't split it with the listeners or anything like that, but yeah, we'll do it. Okay, so it is the Wake and Rake. It is a Friday. We've got an absolutely loaded weekend. There's a ton of things to go over. But yeah, the Blue Jays are back, right? So let's start with this Blue Jays game tonight. Boy. Cincinnati Reds, Blake, you brought it up. They have won a bunch of games in a row, but their pitching staffs are terrible. The Blue Jays, something's got to give here. This is the over team versus the under team in the sports betting world. The total's at 8.5. Pretty conservative, I've got to say. Blue Jays minus 182 favorites, Reds plus 147. Initial lean on either these totals or this money line value.
So let me set up the pitching matchup for you.
It's
so
Ryu.
On the Cincinnati side, it's Ryu. On the Cincinnati side, it's Luis Castillo, who has been good enough that Jays fans occasionally over the last few years have done the Monty Burns fingers and wondered if the Reds might be looking to shed even more salary, even though they are already embarrassingly low on salary. He's only pitched twice this year as he works his way back from injury. He has not been particularly good with a 5.59 ERA. You don't worry so much about the ERA with a guy who has five partial to full seasons of being a four or sub four guy. But the issue so far is he's not missing bats at all. He's getting swinging strikes about half the time that he normally does. So if you're looking for, again, like the other day when we set up the second of the Mariners games, it's a potential high contact day for the Jays hitters, which is nice. Now, it's also possible that at some point Castillo just clicks and he's back and he's his old self. But for right now, he is probably topping out at 5 innings. They haven't really let him go. He hasn't been effective enough to warrant going deep. And the Reds have not only the worst bullpen in baseball, they have like the worst bullpen that you can statistically do without getting relegated in a sport that doesn't relegate teams. If you can get to this bullpen early and often over the course of the weekend, they own a preposterous 4.94 ERA as a bullpen group, which is ridiculous. So now, on the Jays hitter side, though, because Luis Castillo spent his entire career in the NL, only two Blue Jays have faced him before. One is Bradley Zimmer, who I can't imagine we'll see today other than as his every game he gets in as the pinch runner and replacement outfielder. But interesting, I gotta just pivot right into a prop to throw at you guys. Raimel Tapia, 5-for-8 in his career against Luis Castillo. 1.4 slugging percentage against him and an OPS over 2. Obviously, very, very tiny samples. But the reason this is interesting to me is not necessarily for the Tapia minus 180 to get a hit. But if he does have the success against Castillo that he's had in the past, the Reds are also third in the majors in allowing stolen bases.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
The Tapia has a history of getting on base against this guy. The Reds are very poor at controlling the run game, and a Tapia stolen base is going off at plus 850.
Massive Tapia game. I'm all in on my buddy, my guy.
Your buddy.
Your buddy. Yeah.
My pal.
My only thing with this, because I love it, and this has been a early season. You and I were really locking into the Raimel Tapia stolen base.
Well, you were getting him at plus 1400 sometimes. It's like, man, I'll play that all the time, even if he can't get on base.
But okay, so obviously he's only getting on base. He's getting on base like, you know, 25% of the time, which is not great. Not very good,
not
Mr.
Raimel
Tapia. Not very good. So 25% of 33 games, he's only stolen 3 bases. Like, I'm just, this is my only reservation because I actually like the number. I think that anything that you're saying that is a plus 8 something for a guy that's speedy and is getting on base is actually decent value. Like, again, this is about finding edges, not locks, right? And to me, this is a slight edge. So I'm totally with you. My only slight counter to this is that for whatever reason, they haven't really unleashed him on the base paths the way that I sort of thought that they would, especially for a team that, like, the Blue Jays still kind of seem to be doing the thing where they go, well, we hit home runs, so we're not going to have guys steal bases. Instead of, we want to put guys into advantageous positions to score them off of singles. Maybe this starts to shift a little. Maybe they start to play a little bit more. I hate saying small ball because I don't think that necessarily stealing bases is that. But maybe they just start to operate in a different way where they get that out of Tapia. But I will say that one of the disappointing things about his season so far is that he doesn't have more swipes. And not even that he doesn't have more, it's that he doesn't have more attempts. Like, why are they holding this guy back? Because I thought that part of the reason you went out and got Tapia instead of Grichuk is that he's more of a fit. Because he's not a better baseball player than Randall Grichuk. Factually, what's Tapia better than at Grichuk? Making contact for outs? Who cares? Like, historically, Grichuk has a higher WAR. He's obviously a better defensive player. Those are unquestionable things. And he hits for more power, which is more coveted in baseball. So what did you do this trade for? Well, you did it for salary, which they haven't used, but also positional versatility, which is he hits from the left side and he's got speed. So at what point are you going to say, like, let's use the things that we got this guy for, and other than just hits from left side, which is the thing that they've done. So I don't mind the value. I'm just saying it's an annoying bugaboo that this is the second time I've said bugaboo today.
I have some optimism that Tapia will begin running again. And one is that the Jays have allowed him to be extremely aggressive on the base paths in other situations. He's tried to take the extra base situations 80% of the time this year.
Love that.
That's really high.
Don't know how you quantify that stat, but yeah,
well,
love
it's,
it.
Like, if you're on second, where did you get you that home stat? On a, Baseball Reference has it.
Okay.
If you're on second, do you try to score on a single? If you're on first, do you try to get the third on a single? If you're on first, do you try to score on a double? So 80% of the time, they're allowing him to try to take the extra base. Also, in terms of, well, okay, the idea you can't steal first base, right? So he's only tried 4 stolen base attempts this year, but he's only had 37 stolen base opportunities where he's on base without a runner in front of him. So that's pretty low. Running about 10% of the time when you have a stolen base opportunity is pretty in line with his career mark. He just hasn't been getting on first base a lot. So that's the bigger issue here than any Jays conservativeness or conservatism here. So it's not, it hasn't really been a Jays thing so much as Tapia just really hasn't had many opportunities by even his low standards.
Yeah, you know what though? I'd rather see it be higher than 10% of the time that you give him a stolen base opportunity.
Sure. There's no, it's just like last year it was like 10.5%. The year before that it was like 9.6%.
Yeah, which is online, but that's what I'm saying is I'd like to see this team get a little bit more aggressive considering they traded for him in order to have someone that is more of a threat.
In general, you're not hitting the home runs that normally, like the guys at the top of the order are not doing the things right now that normally make you hesitate to steal bases, right? Like,
how's our Vladdy stolen bases prop looking?
Dead. Yeah. It's dead. Stop bringing it up.
Yeah, you worry about giving away outs, but that means less if you're not hitting well. So,
yeah. So,
okay.
Anyway,
speaking of hitting
I'm going to play.
Do you think Vladdy continues his streak of getting a hit today? Or just getting a single today, because you can certainly keep that narrative in mind. And this is now the longest in his career that he's had consecutive games with a hit. Just to get a single, which he's been doing.
It's minus
120. No, just a single. Sorry. Just a single.
Exactly a single.
Yes. Okay, is minus 125. But if he just to get a hit.
No chance.
Is minus 280.
Here's the thing. That is, to me, not good value. But not only is it not good value, it's like now I'm going to sneaky root for Vladdy to only hit a single in this game. Like,
right,
no way.
Better.
At this, if that number was the Tapia number where I go, oh, it's plus 850, okay, maybe now we're talking because I'll root a little bit against this guy and just root for singles. But no, I want nothing more than to see Vladdy hit a bomb again. You know, like I like when Vladdy hits bombs. That's one of my favorite things. I would say Austin Matthews. This is the pantheon of things that you enjoy watching in this city right now. Number one is still to me Austin Matthews with just a complete head full of steam snapping a puck past someone because nobody does it the way that he does it, right? It's like his shot is unique. When there's a player between Austin Matthews and he's off the rush and he finds that release and he rips it bar down, there's nothing more pure. Number two, though, is a Vladdy bomb. Number two is a Vladdy bomb. And the only reason it's not number one is because, like, okay, home runs can be very similar. Anybody can smash one, right? Chapman hits a very sexy home run when he runs into them. He's a sexy home run hitter. There's a difference in caliber of home run hitters, and Vladdy's at the very top of that echelon when he runs into them. So, like, I missed the Vladdy bombs. We got three of them in one game, and then he went, I was never going to hit these again.
That's
and
enough.
I'm going, bring them back. So, no, there's no bet that I ever want to play that involves me rooting against one of my favorite things to watch in all of professional sports.
Okay, so quickly on the other side of things, Hyunjin Ryu makes his second start back from the IL. Obviously looked pretty good against the Tampa Bay Rays in that first one, one earned over 4 2/3 innings. The Cincinnati Reds are an awful offense. They are even more awful. They are awfuler against lefties. They have a WRC plus of just 65 against left-handed hitters or left-handed pitchers. That's so extreme that they're actually almost league average against right-handed pitchers, and still they're down at the bottom in terms of overall offense. These guys do not hit lefties well at all. They have a 280 OBP against lefties and a 299 slugging against lefties. There's nobody on the Reds that has a good track record against Ryu with any kind of sample. There's just not a lot of sample there in general.
So the Cincinnati Reds, Blake, you brought up their bullpen. They're one of only two bullpens this season with a negative Fangraphs war, which is quite astounding. like they're one of two, them and the Texas Rangers. They have a pitcher on the mound that has struggled and to me does not have a profile that scares the Toronto Blue Jays tonight. Hyunjin Ryu is pitching in this game. And as bad as the Reds have been against lefties, I don't have a lot of faith in Ryu going deep. And what does that mean? Well, that means that I'm watching a baseball game with what was the 20th ranked bullpen in baseball in the Blue Jays, but since then has lost their two best relief pitchers since being the 20th, like in order to get there. And the only negative bullpen, like I mentioned in WAR, the 29th ranked bullpen by Fangraphs WAR. I'm going over tonight. I cannot believe it. I never go over in Blue Jays games. I've been my lock of I have built my bankroll this year consistently on teasing up the Blue Jays by a run or two and nailing that under and then sitting there often nights to a sweat-free victory with a lot of money on it but with a heavy amount of juice. Tonight, I'm going the other way. I'm zagging. I'm going against it. I'm saying the Jays are going to score some runs. I'm saying that at least Cincinnati. Give me two runs, Cincinnati. That's all I need from you tonight. I think the Jays get off the schneid a little bit here. I think they put it together. I like the way Kirk's going. I like the way Bo's going. This feels like a big Springer game. This feels like a little bit more from Vladdy. At least he's hitting baseballs. I just want the Rymotapia thing that Blake mentioned. All of a sudden, I'm going to get a little length down the lineup. If you can't smash up this Cincinnati Reds team for some runs, if you can't get off the schneid, you guys are bums. Straight up. So figure it out. And go out there and smash these guys up. 8.5. It's an actual play from me today.
Is it your wake and rake, though?
I usually don't put the local teams in the wake and rake. I did have a separate wake and rake pick, but I do like this over more than the other bet. I was going to say that.
I just wanted to double check before we kick it to Ailish to lead us off with bet.
Here's the thing. I like both hockey favorites. Well, here's the thing. That's a way better number. The Blue Jays over, right? The Blue Jays over tonight, I'm seeing at, what was it, minus 110? Like, minus 110 is a much better number than for over 8.5 than either of the hockey favorites, which I both like. I just think that the Flames are way better than the Oilers. And so, yeah, you can get that on a money line at minus 180. You can also play the regulation win at minus 114 or the – what's the spread here? Flames plus 136. They're plus 136 to win by two. I'm just saying, I think the Flames are going to continue to dominate the Oilers, but it is more still of a coin toss sport, so it's like, it's not crazy good value. And I think that the Carolina Hurricanes, the Rangers had a chance to put them away in that first game. Like, they had it. It was right there. They could have grabbed that series. I always worry about the team like the Rangers that gets a shot and blows it, and then the following game, how they respond when they're a younger team. And I think Carolina is going to, like, this is what killer instinct is to me as a hockey fan, is you don't blow these opportunities to put a team in a hole. And I don't think Carolina will blow their opportunity. I like both favorites in the NHL tonight as well. So whatever. Anyway, Ailish, make your pick. I'll take whatever you guys want. I got lots of picks, all right? I'm betting on a lot of things tonight.
I have a lot of baseball stuff today, which is cool. Yeah. I'm with you on Calgary. I think the value play there might actually be the Oilers to score under 2.5 goals. You can get that for plus 120.
Can't do it.
I know. I want a more exciting game, but I'm expecting a pretty big course correction from Sutter's Flames
in terms of
attention to defensive detail.
No, this I don't guy, trust it.
This guy right here made the worst – my worst gambling.
Oh, the in-game over/under.
My worst bets of the entire. Yeah, I'll say out of 2022, my worst bets, and the one game I have lost the most money on, I tripled down on the under in the Calgary Edmonton game. Tripled down. Okay, the score was 2-0, and the total went up to 8.5, and I said I gotta buy this. Because usually in blowouts in hockey, at one point, one team just decides to clog up the neutral zone. There's not as much of intensity in the game, and it results in no empty net goals, right? And I thought that was the way that that game was tracking. Calgary was all over them. So I buy it at 8.5. Game starts to get crazy. 8.5 starts to become very clear that this is not going to be still alive. So during the second period, I buy it again. At 11.5, and I go, 11.5, come on. There's not going to be 12 goals in this game. There's not going to be 12 goals. Let's not get... These teams are going to settle in eventually here. Someone's going to take a timeout and chastise their team and say, hey, settle the bleep down, okay? Stop turning the bleeping puck over, and how about we just play hockey like professional athletes do? They never did that entire game. That didn't come until the very end of it. So I doubled down on the 11.5. I went back at it. In a chase bet kind of greasier way at the 12.5 because I thought, okay, one more time. Bad. Just a bad, bad, bad night for that. So I'm too snake bit. I've lost too much money on that. I'm out on unders in this series. I will not play them, even though Calgary made me a ton of money on the unders in the Dallas series.
All right. Well, that touches on my wake and rake, but bonus pick. You got to bet on my guy, Kyle Hendricks, for the Cubs, my Dartmouth alumni, the only ever MLB Dartmouth player pitching today against the Diamondbacks. Just a free little fun bet for all the Dartmouth fans out there. But
Cubs
my
suck.
Wake and rake, yeah, whatever. They're favored, minus 140, so They should win
Arizona
because that's
sucks
how it works,
too.
Right?
Yeah, that is how it
okay.
works.
So
that's why we're all rich.
The Oilers and the Flames. I cannot wait to watch what I expect. Will still be a highest scoring goal. They had 15 goals in the first game, and I know that there's probably not going to be 15 goals tonight, but even if they score half the amount of goals, it will still hit the over. The over is at 6.5. I will be putting the over in my wake and rake. I do not trust the goaltenders in this series, okay? That was blatantly obvious. Even if the course correction of let's buckle down and play harder is a real narrative, 6.5 goals, I'm hitting the over.
Yeah, I'm with Blake in terms of this is usually just a regression spot. But also, you would have said the same thing in the last series where you would have gone, well, eventually Calgary and Dallas are going to score some goals. There's going to be a game where these two teams do it. I just think in a game where there's Connor McDavid, where he puts pressure on opposing defenses the way he does, the fact that Edmonton wants to play that open style of hockey, a bit of that run and gun, that you're relying on a bounce back from 40-year-old Mike Smith isn't great. I would like to see Markstrom make some stops. I think he'll be a lot better tonight, but he sucked in that game, and until he does bounce back, maybe he is a little rattled. I don't mind it. I'm actually not going to bet against you tonight. I actually like the idea of I'm going to stick with the overplay in the Blue Jays game, simply because that's two over bets. Blake, do you have a third over bet for the wake and rake today? Can we do it where this is the over parlay?
Not only do I have an over for the wake and rake, I have an over bonus bet that I like as well. So the wake and rake pick is the Houston Astros to score over 4.5 runs. They're playing against the Texas Rangers. We know Texas is bad. You know, when I cite those pitcher hitter stats, well, when I sort that today, it's nothing but Astros players who have absolutely tattooed Martin Perez. The Astros have hit the over 4.5 in 9 of their last 11 games. They're the number three offense in baseball. They're probably tied for a number of baseballs in baseball. But yeah, Martin Perez, bad. Texas Rangers, bad. I think you said they're the only bullpen worse than Cincinnati, right, JD? And on top of that, you get Martin Perez starting, and the Astros have tattooed him. You can get Astros over 4.5 at just at -115. So decent value there in my books. The bonus pick is the New York Mets. Over 5.5 at the Colorado Rockies. You get the Coors Field bump. The Mets have been a monster offensively. They have hit that number a handful of times lately. It's a high one, obviously, but it's a Coors Field inflated number. The over-under for the entire game is 10, and that's mostly Mets heavy. Eduardo Escobar would be the guy to keep an eye on in that one. He has been struggling of late. The last 2 weeks, he hasn't hit the ball well at all, but he has killed Herman Marquez in his career, and he's got the Coors Field boost there. So your wake and rake for today, May 20th, my brother Matthew's birthday. Happy birthday, Matthew.
You should have told Ailish that, though, before, so she could have found some 20 thing, you know?
No, I didn't want to mention it until I knew he was awake. Because
you only
he's
have
off
a brother?
Took...
Wait, did you Matthew. Say your, his 20th birthday?
No, it's May 20th. The 20th.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That threw me for a loop. I was like, your brother's 20 years old?
I think he's 31 today.
Okay, I was going to say, all right. I was like, this just blew my mind. I knew he had a son. I was like, you got a 16-year gap between. That's what I mean. I was like,
their birthdays are one day apart. That's really sweet.
That's precious.
Big celebration weekend.
Yes.
That's so
precious. Let's do it for Matthew.
Yeah, do it for Matthew. All right. Well, I like the vibes. I got to tell you, I love the vibes of being on the overs because everybody loves an over, okay? So even if we lose this
way
money, it'll be
fun.
A fun way to lose this money, all right? Like, let's lose it in
so
a fun
refresh.
Way.
Toronto Blue Jays and Cincinnati Reds over 8.5. Edmonton Oilers and Calgary Flames over 6.5. The Houston Astros against the Texas Rangers to score over 4.5 just on the Astros side of that one. That's your wake and rake for today, May 20th. And happy birthday, Matthew. Nolan doesn't understand what people are saying yet, but happy one day late first birthday to him as well, you little chubster. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to a guy who wasn't on the call last weekend because his son was celebrating a graduation, but he's back. And we're going to see how he feels about a country weekend with the Blue Jays. It's Dan Schulman next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.